Country walk, yeah. You smell the country, homie. A dangerous combination, we gon' let the world see. We put in work and pay the dues, homie, this right here ain't free. This R&B came naturally, can't deny it's meant to be. We fell so deep in this game, but we some good.
219 The Talk.
Talk about real issues.
Freedom.
Free your mind, body, and soul.
Life. Love. Relationships.
Freedom.
Let freedom become your home.
The real deal. You know what? Let's just get into it.
219 The Talk.
Hey, 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 what's going on, y'all? This is JD the Barber. I done made it in the house tonight. It's a beautiful thing to be here Thursday night in Houston, Texas, where it's hotter than a fat girl with a fever.
Oh,
and, we here, baby. That's what's going on. Is that trailer right there?
No, that's Own It, Own It.
Oh, that's Own It, Own It. What's happening, baby girl?
Oh, my goodness. Fighting this heat. Fighting this heat. Oh.
Yeah. I'm going to let you know right now on this. I'm one of them climate control type brothers, meaning I got a real mean love affair with my air conditioning system in my house. And that's where I'm at. I'm up in here hugged up and snugged up with my wife and my AC, my two favorites.
And old
Yeah. Got a little bite to it going on, too, as they say. Such a bite to it.
What's up, Queenie? Oh, listen, you know, I don't know why old folks said I can't call it, but I can. It has been, let me tell you something. When I say so much has been happening, it's been so, it's good stuff, you know, trying to get organizations going and trying to get people situated and all that kind of stuff, but God is good. God is truly, truly good.
He has equipped you for the journey. Always remember that.
And that's why they say, honest, you want to hear God's ass tell him what you're planning. So I'm just excited. We missed you last week. Oh, we missed on it. Why? Because you're going to tell it like it is, just straight up. You're going to tell it like it is.
I don't know any other way.
I know that's right. We want to start this show off just giving a tribute to Chadwick Boseman. Just dive into that and just talk a little bit about, we didn't know him personally. We knew him through movies, through television, through interviews, even a little comedy on SNL, you know. Just a young man, and this is what got me. He was born the same year I was born, 1977. So just knowing that he accomplished so much in the little time that he was here.
Right.
You know?
Right. He was certainly a bright and shining star in the entertainment community. And for a black man to accomplish as much as he did, and to set a social precedent like he did in the black community, like you say, in such a short time. You know, they say bright stars burn out fast a lot of times, and he just happened to be one of our bright stars that burned out fast. But he left a lasting legacy with some of the work that he did. You know, he's in such movies as 21 Bridges, you know, like the new one that just came out, The Five Bloods, he's in that. He does a wonderful job. And there are several others, but, you know, everybody knows him best for playing T'Challa, the Black Panther. So I just want to, you know, shout out to the Avenger world, Marvel, I guess that's who it is. Stan,
yeah.
What's his name? Stan? Stan Lee, right. But Stan Lee and the whole entire Marvel and Avenger genre for giving him an opportunity and highlighting and shining a movie surrounded by black, beautiful, affluent, you know, well-spoken, very intelligent world of black folks. You know, that was a big step by Marvel to do that. You know, I mean, Black Panther has been out for years as a comic book, but for them to put it together and put it on the screen and use a rising star like Chadwick Boseman, and if there were other great actors and actresses in that movie, simply highlight a utopia-type black world was such a great step in the midst of this foolishness that's been going on throughout our country at this time. That was just a profound and great thing to have put on the big screen. And that was one of Marvel's highest grossing films to date, you know. I mean, so
Yes, it was. They made much money off of that.
Oh, yeah. They made some of the, you know, the most amount of money ever been put out by a Marvel movie, basically.
And it was done by a black man. Yes.
Right.
And you never would have thought that. Okay, so we have to give kudos to Denzel Washington also, because he was key in helping him in his professional journey, and we have to give kudos to him. I'm quite sure he's feeling it, you know, too, because through it he has, you know, gained a great friend, and I'm quite sure, you know, he's feeling it too. You know, a young black man gone too soon, gone way too soon.
Right. Well, the thing is, you know, Denzel is another great actor, and you know, he was one who has stood on the shoulders of great actors before him. But you know, that is one thing that I admire about Denzel and Chadwick as well, that they understood the dynamics of who they were and what they meant to the black community. So they always had decorum and honor in everything that they did. Whatever roles that they chose, they were able, because of their talent and their know-how, they were able to choose the roles that they wanted. They didn't have to settle for certain roles or demean themselves or their black man's honor to, you know, make it in Hollywood. And so many other black actors and actresses have had to do, they did not compromise who they were to get ahead in the game. And they were willing to help those who came behind them and help them get in the game and find honor and decorum in the Hollywood industry as well. So I applaud Denzel Washington and actors like himself, you know, such as the Sidney Poitiers, the Harry Belafonte, the, you know, we've just had so many Lawrence Fishburne, so many great black actors, you know, that have come before these guys. And he was just one and one of the latest in a long line of great black actors that have come through Hollywood. And we got a lot more youngsters that are up and coming right now, that like Michael B. Jordan and a few others that are out there that are actually making some significant leaps and bounds in the you know, movie industry.
Well, you know, they said that, you know, he knew Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick was very, very close.
Right.
He used to play in soap operas together.
Well, the thing is, when you are a black man in a small elite group, you pretty much know each other. You know, it's just like a, it's like a unwritten fraternity.
Yeah.
And there's rites of passages, and I'm hoping and praying that these black men who are prominent in the entertainment industry are taking their time out to mentor and give back. You know, maybe having secret meetings somewhere. I don't know what you do, but I'm just hoping that they are helping to guide along this up and coming black industry that's taking place right in before our eyes. So I'm just hoping that's what's going on. So I hope they all know each other.
You know what? On this, I was looking at Facebook, and I noticed that on Facebook, you had a lot of children that were paying tribute. You know, the family had shared with you. And then you see posts where children were crying or they were doing the Wakanda Forever and, you know, and paying tribute to. Because some people don't understand the effects as well he had on the children, letting them know as black children that they could be superstars. It's the same thing, you know, praise God, you know, we still have Obama alive, you know, amen. But looking at this leadership that we have in the black community, I think it's very important that now we start to really, really celebrate our stars and leaders, you know, just off the fact that it was a time to where black people couldn't get into different the White House and couldn't act in certain movies, you know, certain roles, couldn't be in a leading role. They didn't cast black men as heroes, you know, in any type of fashion, you know. But I think that is very important in this day and time, you know, that we begin to celebrate all aspects of our culture, acting, music, all of those different things, and show our children that we are a race that's so full of culture, so it's just amazing. You know, there's no limit for what they can do.
Yes, it is. Well, you know, the thing about the movie Black Panther, subtitle Wakanda Forever, is that if we sit down and we really talk to our children concerning this movie, which really taken us back to where we really came from. Because, you know, today we want, you know, a lot of groups want to portray us as gun-toting drug dealers. But we are, first of all, the original Hebrews. Second of all, we were scientists, mathematicians. We had communities rich in resources, rich in culture. We took care of each other. And then, you know, as things came along, that structure was broken down and we were separated. And that's what we feed on today, because that, you know, based upon the 400 years of slavery, what happened to us in that 400 years, our families were torn apart, our men were beaten, and, you know, both parties were raped, our children, you know, yanked out of our hands and sent into another slavery camp. And so mishap and chaos came into our culture, and it changed us. So when kids look at Wakanda and they see, oh my goodness, all these beautiful black people, you know, different shapes, different sizes, you know, I think the most beautiful ones, you know, and I'm a little biased, excuse me, were the warrior women who had all their hair cut off. Oh my God. What a statement did that make? Those women were beautiful, you know. So
gorgeous.
Yes, it made a statement. He made a statement. Even the storyline itself made a statement, you know. You know, royalty passed down from generation to generation, And, you know, if you're not careful, you know, small things can disrupt what is rightfully belonged to a person. But even so, King, he tried to do what was right and still protect the people. So I think that was an admirable part to play in that movie, and he will be renowned forever for that, you know, for that movie. It was awesome.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's why I said I gave shout out and kudos to Stan Lee, who is the actual creator of this wonderful world that we saw transpire on television. You know, Stan Lee wrote Black Panther many, many years ago, you know, before Chadwick Boseman was even born. Really, you know, there was no Chadwick Boseman at the time, you know, the world of Wakanda was created in Stan Lee's mind. So you have to understand that it took Stan Lee's imagination and his creativity to even think about a world where black folks were royalty, where black folks were beautiful, where black folks were living in harmony and utopia. You know, this comic book was written during tumultuous times in the black community. And for Stan Lee to foresee, you know, for him to foresee a world such as Wakanda, you know, during the tumultuous times that black people were going through in their history, and for it to finally be seen, you know, it's almost a divine assignment for it to be seen at the time that it was, because, you know, black folks have been going through it throughout black history, you know, throughout American history, rather. You know, there I don't care what the world says, there is no American history without black people involved in it. You know, black people were the economic catalyst for America to be the power on the global community that it is. They got 400 years of free labor to boost that economy and to get it to a economic status that other countries could not touch. So we have, you know, there is no great America that they talk about nowadays without the free labor of the black slave that they went over and robbed and raped and pillaged and grabbed our communities and kidnapped us and brought us back to America to work for free under tumultuous, under, you know, ridiculous, heinous conditions. We were forced into labor and beaten into submission and robbed of all of our heritage and given a new identity, and we are still suffering because of that as a black people. So
I
applaud Stan Lee for that to happen.
So I want to veer off, keeping on subject, but kind of veering off from the subject. We talk about groups that came over and took us from our homeland. And that is popular. That is true. But nobody really tells of how really our people started the slavery movement of our people.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, honest, the thing is, slavery is not not a new concept. Now, white slavery is a new concept. Now, we can go back to slavery all the way back into the Egyptian times. You know, the thing was, when I conquered your civilization, when I conquered your tribe of people, we made slaves of your people. That was just a simple, you know, that was just a simple concept in Africa, in Egypt. I mean, the thing is, there was no slavery that was as treacherous, as cruel, and as demeaning, and as let's just say, vile and ridiculous as the European concept of slavery. Europeans' concept of slavery took slavery to a new standard. They would beat the buck or the black man into submission. They robbed us of our identity, our religion, our gods. They robbed us of that and beat that out of us and put their ideology and gave us their god.
That method of like they would break a horse.
Right. Breaking a buck breaking.
Right.
You know, they called it buck breaking. They would take the biggest, most menacing looking black man and they would literally break a buck, as they called it. They would rape him in front of everybody. They would beat him into submission. They would, you know, beat him within an inch of his life. And they just really demeaned him and let the rest of them know that if we do this to him, you have no chance. You know, that was a real, I guess you could say, real psychological warfare that occurred with European slavery. You know, in Africa, we didn't treat, you know, the tribes didn't treat each other like that when you were enslaved. Sometimes, even in slavery, they have stories where one tribe enslaved another tribe, and they almost basically adopted them as like family members and treated them with respect and kindness. Now, you had to serve, and you had to wait on, you know, or cater to that new tribe, you know, and the kings and the queens and all that, and royalty in the tribe. You had to cater to them as a slave, but you not demeaned and beaten and done like European slavery was done. That was a whole different slavery that was introduced to the world once European slave trade started. Now, I have read stories on this of black African tribes who tried to fight against European slave traders after they realized. Because the thing was, you have to understand something. African people were not new to slavery. They understood slavery, but they did not know the magnitude of the European slavery when they were letting slaves be taken and brought to America. They thought that the slaves would be treated the same way they treated slaves in Africa. They did not, once they found out how cruel. Because no one was ever able to come back and tell them just how cool European slavery was over here in the United States. But there were a few African kings and queens who found out how cool European slavery was and tried to stand against European slavery, and they ended up getting their entire tribes wiped out. There are stories in the history books of kings and queens who stood up against European slavery and ended up getting their entire villages wiped out and their kingdoms taken, getting themselves killed and all of that. Now, let me explain something to you. There has never been a land where the white man has put his foot down and not destroyed it, not brought famine, disease, actually.
Even in Australia.
Right. Exactly. So you have to understand that the concept of slavery, you're right. It's not white people were not the first ones to enslave. But European slavery was the most cruelest concept of slavery that in the world history. In world history, not American history, but in world history. There were no other slaves like the Europeans who brought African slaves to the United States. Yeah, go ahead. What are you saying now, Janice? Quinn?
Oh, I was just saying, you know, we to bring us gorillas back in, of course, I want to take the time to really just honor. And I'm trying to tell y'all, 292 South is really a place where we do this at. You know where they do that at?
Right.
We do it right here. You know, and the information that we share. Believe me, let me tell you something. It's enough studying. and gathering of information before we share it. Okay.
Right.
So to really look back into honoring Chadwick Boseman, I just at this moment want to I just want to say something else on Chadwick Boseman before I just we do a moment of silence for him and his family.
I really, being a basically a private person myself, I admire him through his sickness. He never said a mumbling word when people were talking mean and ugly because he knew his fight. He understood his battle. And I believe he had made peace with his battle. So for therefore, I do not only for his accomplishments in life, but his accomplishments as far as his journey to his final resting place. My hat is off to him. I admire him. And even through the negativity, he still stood. He still, you know, he got married. And I give, you know, kudos to his wife because he surrounded himself with people that loved him. And I just admire him for that, you know.
Amen. Amen.
Rest in peace, King.
Yeah, right. Amen.
So at this time, we're just going to have a moment of silence.
Okay. Well, thank the Lord, and we'll always remember Chadwick and the beautiful work that he did as a African American philanthropist as well as a actor, and he has some body of work that will last forever, basically. Let's move on to another topic. I want to talk about a young man by the name of Daniel Trude. Have you ever heard of this name before?
No.
Okay.
It's not ringing any bell.
Okay. Well, let me ring a bell, and I hope it's heard all over the world. Daniel Prude is a young man in New York who was killed about 2 months prior to George Floyd being killed by the police.
Wow.
He was killed. Yeah, he was killed, and it took me to research some situation, and a video that I saw, I had to go and research it. But this young man was an African-American man visiting his family in New York, in the state of New York. I want to say he was in Rochester, New York, but I know he was somewhere upstate New York area. And this young man, first of all, let me explain to you, this young man was 41 years, yeah, he was 41 years old, and he had mental issues, right?
Okay.
He was a young black man who was visiting his brother in upstate New York, Rochester, New York area. And it happened in March. The situation happened in March. What happened was he was having a mental episode. You know, you have family members who miss their medicine. They just say it like that.
Yeah.
They aren't taking medication like they're supposed to be. And he was having a mental episode. Now, because he was having a mental episode and his brother did not know how to handle it, he called the police. And this was on March. I'm looking at it now. It happened on March the 23rd of this past year. Because his brother was showing acute mental health problems. You know, he was out, put it like this, he was walking around the streets of Rochester, New York in March, butt naked and acting a fool. That's what the video shows. There's an actual video, you can look it up on YouTube. It's Daniel Prude, Daniel as the traditional spelling, and Prude, P-R-U-D-E. So when you get an opportunity, if you ever want to go look at it, you can go look at it. It's probably on YouTube. But anyway, So Daniel Poole, it shows, the video shows him being detained. Now, the brother called the police to, in an effort to help his brother, you know what I'm saying, to get some type of assistance for his brother. He wouldn't call him for him to do nothing to his brother because that's a family member. He loves him. He don't want anything done to him. But he does want him restrained and get him some help. So the thing that happens is the video shows the police approaching him. It's seven officers. They approach Daniel Poole. You see Daniel Poole immediately, even though he's having a mental episode, he knows who the police are. And he starts to comply with the police. He gets down on the ground. He puts his hands up where they can see him. You know he's unarmed because he's butt naked. So he can't be hiding. So they end up handcuffing the young man and holding him on the ground. Now what happens is he tells the police that he has COVID-19 in an effort to get them up off of him, I would imagine. He tells them that he has COVID-19. So because of COVID-19 situation, they take one of those spit hoods and they put it over his head. And when they put the spit hood over his head, they tighten it up and they mash his face and body into the ground. All of them are putting their weight on it. Now, come to mind, you, this is 2 months prior to George Floyd. You know, so he is finally subdued and passes out, and they call EMS to come get him. Now, EMS comes and gets him and takes him to the hospital. Because of his injuries that he sustained from the police restraining him and whatnot, a week later, he dies in the hospital from complications of asphyxiation. Basically, his brain was robbed of oxygen so long that he never recovered, and he died because of this interaction with the police.
My Lord.
Now, that is...
What did they do to these officials? What did they do to them?
Honestly, not a damn thing. Now, as the brother has quoted, I'm gonna quote what the brother said. I placed a phone call for my brother to get help, not for my brother to get lynched. That is a direct quote from the brother. He had to stand by and watch the police do all this to his brother, and all he wanted to do was get some help for his mentally ill brother, not for him to get killed by the police. You know, this story is a sad story, but it goes to something that I said a long time ago, Onus, when I talked about it, because let me tell you something. This story is near and dear to my heart. I'm going to tell you why. I had a cousin here in Houston, Texas. Now, this girl was a brilliant scholar. She went to Northwestern in Chicago, and she obtained a master's degree from Northwestern. She retained a bachelor's and a master's degree within 4 years of college at Northwestern University in Chicago. And Northwestern is a prestigious university in the United States. They're like almost like an Ivy League caliber type school. You have to be a pretty smart person to get in, let alone to graduate in 4 years with a master's degree from Chicago, from Northwestern. Now, the thing is, this young lady did all of this great work as a scholar and ended up at a party one night. Now, she was a beautiful girl. First of all, let me explain that. My cousin was fine. She was beautiful. She was a good-looking black woman. Now, what happened was she was at a party in Chicago, party like youngsters do it. You know, she's 22 years old, 21 years old, whatever. She's out having a good time. And someone slipped drugs into her drink, and she was never, ever mentally the same again. She was crazy as a Betsy bug when she got back here to Houston. She would have mental lapses and mental episodes You know, she was on medication. She saw so many doctors. Her parents, you know, her parents had a little bit of snaps about them too. So they had she had good medical care, but she was never psychologically the same again. She would have mental lapses and mental episodes that she went through. Now, she at one point had a mental episode, and she had a butcher knife and was threatening the entire family. She lived with my auntie now, and they were elderly people, and, you know, she was threatening this. Now, this was, she did, this happened to her in her 20s. She was in her 40s, you know, mid to late 40s when this happened to her, that this incident I'm telling you about. So she grabs a butcher knife and starts threatening everybody in the house. So by that time, her parents are elderly, you know, in their 70s, you know, late 60s, early 70s. So they can't do anything with them. So they call the police for some assistance with this family member. So the police get there, and she's still wielding this butcher knife and still threatening people and all that. And instead of just tasing her or trying to subdue this 135, 140-pound black female, they gun her down in front of her family.
Oh, no.
With a butcher knife. So I always talk about this situation because I tell people all the time, you know, the police are not equipped to deal with mental issues. You know what I'm saying? They're not really equipped and savvy enough and compassionate enough oftentimes to deal with your family members who are having mental problems. You know, so it's a real thin line and a very you know, a very tricky situation that you get put in when you have family members who are mentally ill and you end up calling the police to try to defuse or subdue a situation. You got to be careful with the police, especially in these inner cities and these big cities, because these police are not trained, nor do they give a damn enough to deal with these mental patients on the caliber or level that they need to deal with them. They end up hurting, killing, destroying a beautiful life that had no business being snuffed out early. You know, that I mean,
well,
because you're crazy, because you're crazy and you have mental issues, gives the police no right to kill you outright. And like I said, this my cousin was gunned down with a butcher knife in her hand by some officers right in front of her family. I mean, in the front yard of their household. Can you imagine that? And you the ones call the police on them?
And they end up dead.
The type of mental anguish that must put on your family members to understand that, you know, because you have nothing to do but blame yourself. You know, even though it's not your fault, you are going to blame yourself out of just normal human response.
Yeah.
All the time, be careful that you call the police on your folks when they're crazy, when they're having mental issues. You try, you know, I would try to subdue them myself first. What do you think about a situation like that?
You don't want to get hurt in the process. And I think that it's really sad that you really don't have anyone to call. I know there's a family in the news that I heard they call the American Red Cross. And the American Red Cross sent the police out, and the person ended up dead.
Right. So,
where do you go? But, you know, mental illness in this country, you know, it is a big problem. It is a big issue. And it's like nobody cares. If we get rid of them, it's like if we get rid of them, there'll be no more mentally ill people. Well, if that's the case, then a lot of our politicians need to be, you know, locked up.
And a lot of the police officers who they're sending out to defuse these situations,
and
hell, they need to be
like, and it seems like they only get in psychiatric evaluation after they done killed or did something crazy.
Well, actually, a lot of times they don't even get the psychiatric. They don't even give them a psych evaluation after that. They simply will ask them a few questions and send them back out on street duty.
And that should be mandatory.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Oh. They'll give them, make them sit behind a desk for 30 days or whatever. But then you
right.
can be best and sure they'll be right back out there.
Exactly. Yeah, so my heart goes out to this family, the Prude family, because like I said, there's really no buffer in between, in the mental health world where you can call somebody that will get you some appropriate help. They, like you said, they call the Red Cross first, and the Red Cross call the police, and the police end up coming out there and killing them. So, there's really no recourse that we can use to help get our people some help that we don't know if they're going to be hurt or killed in the process of trying to get them the help that they need. So there's really a great need in the mental health community for some type of assistance that can be given to families who suffer with mental health patients in their family that may need or have episodes from time to time. My thing is this, as black people, we really don't deal with the mental health issues that happen in our family. We try to hide Cousin Putin and, Cousin Nut Nut and all them that we know crazy as a
bitch,
but we put them in a back room somewhere and try to hide and keep them out of sight of normal people when we really should have them in some facilities and seeking some, professional mental health help. So we need to, as black community, we need to start to tackle these mental health issues before they get out of hand.
Do you know why they used to be hid? Are you familiar with the lobotomies and what they used to do and experiment on mentally ill people? That's why they used to be hid away. Yeah. That's why, back in the day, they were hid away, because if they weren't, they were subject to be taken from their families and put in these institutions where they were experimented on. And you know what?
Exactly.
Seriously, it's not much better today. It's really not. If they're of a violent nature, the first thing that they say, okay, well, they're too violent for you to take care of them. They have to be hospitalized. They put them in the padded rooms. They put the straight jackets on, and they juice them up totally lethargic, and they stay that way. Many of them die that way, not even knowing that they're really here on God's green earth, But it's funny that you should bring that up, because in Bible study last night, we were talking about this, and that, spirits are real. Evil spirits are real, and you can be attacked by evil spirits. But nobody wants to deal with that aspect of it. It's easier to put a name on it: bipolar, schizophrenia, socially unstable, or whatever name that they have for it. It's easier to put a name on it and dope them up and put them away, and eventually, if they get out of hand, the police will kill them.
Well, let me explain something to you, honest. The reason why they name whatever's wrong with you rather than like you say, really try to treat it, because once you give it a name, you can monetize it with medication. You see what I'm saying?
True.
I'm just gonna give you this tidbit of my life. The education that I've received throughout my 51 years. When I was locked up in the penitentiary, right, I was around some crazies. When I tell you that penitentiary is full of crazies, it's full of crazies. They have a medication for those schizophrenic and violent offenders called Thorazine. I don't know if you've ever
heard
of that medication.
Yes.
But let me tell you,
let me tell you
about Thorazine. Thorazine, when ingested by black people, I'm going to say black because that's who I see most of the time on it. But Thorazine, when ingested by a black person who is violent or shows symptoms of violence or schizophrenia and all these other different names that they get as craziness too, they become zombies. I'm talking about I have literally seen them turn into babbling idiots, drooling, needing a spit rag around their chin and everything, and they were vibrant people, you know, 30 minutes before they took this medicine.
Yeah.
I was like, what in the world is that they just gave that cat right there? I have literally seen them turn that cup up so that, you know, they have a liquid Thorazine in it that goes into your system almost immediately. I have literally been at the medication window and watched the cat, because they make sure you take it, you drink it right there in front of them, and they make you open your mouth and they check the back of your throat and everything when they give you this medicine. Now, I have seen a guy take the medicine at the window and walk a 15-minute walk back to his dormitory, and he can barely climb in the bed by the time he gets back to the damn bunk. I'm talking about within 15 minutes. It has taken effect and completely changed this person's character and their demeanor within 15 minutes. This is a powerful drug. I have never seen anything like it. I was put in the crap of that.
Yeah, like you said, you know, that's the form of control.
Oh, that's all it is. Because let me tell you something. Those guards don't want to have to deal with them guys down there a lot of times. And let me tell you something. These guards are not physically, you know, these guys, some of these guys on this workout all day, every day. They physically fit. They could be MMA fighters, world class, wrestlers and all kind of stuff that's in that penitentiary. But those guards will do something or end up getting something that will help them to control you in that environment. But they know if some of them cats ever got loose on them, they wouldn't be able to do a damn thing with them.
Nothing but shoot them.
Yeah, and they, let me tell you something. When they come in there as a prison guard, they don't give them no gun. All they got is their stick in their hands. And let me tell you something. I know some cats that will take their stick from them and make them eat it. They got
to
do
that. They ain't got nothing but what they got to lose. What do they have to lose?
Let me tell you something, owners. When you got a guy, you can't really talk to a man who crazy. I mean, who got a mean streak and he got a 99-year sentence and he know he ain't never going home. You talk to him crazy and get out of line with him if you want to and watch what happens.
He's going to bust your
and send you to the hospital. If you're lucky, you'll make it back. You know?
Do you want to come back?
That's a hell of a way to get an early retirement, that's for sure.
Yeah,
you know
you'll
saying?
Be crazy. Your skull be them got busted open, and they're going to have to, you know, keep you alive. So what kind of medication they going to put you on?
That's what I was going to say. You may get your early retirement check, but you also may get your wheelchair and a caregiver.
Basically.
Who wants to retire with that?
Who wants to retire like that?
But yeah, on to some more information that we need to talk about. Have you heard about Dr. Dre and his wife?
No.
All right.
No.
Well, let's talk about this. Huh? Dr. Dre's wife has filed for divorce, right? About 2 months ago. She has filed the papers and everything for a divorce from Dr. Dre. Let me explain something to you. Dr. Dre is worth over $800 million. He is basically a black billionaire, literally. His wife is filing for spousal support. She wants $2 million a month for spousal support.
What?
Now, let me explain something to you. In 1996, I think they got married, is what they were saying. 1996, she signed a prenuptial agreement with Dr. Dre when they got married. So she, and not only that, let me explain something to you. She filed for a divorce, but she was the one who got caught cheating. Let me explain that part to you, too. Now, not only that, the time in the last 2 months that she filed the separation and divorce papers, she been living in a Malibu house, right? They have a home in Malibu with service. She's been using the cars. She has maid service. You know, everything at the house Dr. Dre is paying for. Now, she wants to be able to do that, plus get $2 million a month in spousal support. Dre say, hell no. Go ahead and file with the divorce and let me get rid of her. He trying to get rid of her fast. He trying to take this divorce proceeding super fast and make them uphold the prenuptial agreement. Let me ask you a question, Onis. Do you think she is entitled to $2 million a month in spousal support? And she's the one who filed for divorce? And she the one who got caught cheating?
That we know of. Because this is my take on things. No, I'm quite sure they have children together, yes.
Yeah, they got two adult children though, so child support ain't gonna be an issue in that.
We don't know the complete terms of that prenup. They're going to make him pay something. And then, you know, what I found out in situations like this, we're looking at her. Oh, she was the one caught cheating that we know of. Things have a funny way of coming to the surface when you least expect it. So
let me explain, Keona.
Either she's very bright. Hold on. Either she's very bright. This is my take on it. Either she's very brave enough to buck the system, and she knows something that the rest of us don't know, or
right. She
just don't.
Right. But let me explain something to y'all. Dr. Dre has been a celebrity ever since he was a teenager. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
A young teenage, young adult. And it, like I said, he got married in 1996. There is no telling how many bodies he has amassed since 1996 in this marriage. And what I mean by bodies is how many women he done slept with throughout their marriage. But she is the one who got caught recently cheating. So, and then after that, she filed for the divorce, like I said, 2 months ago. So all I got to say is she's got to know something.
She got a lawyer. I hope she does, because I hope she doesn't go through all this being done.
What do you spend $2 million a month on?
It's just the lifestyle she used to.
Huh?
That's the lifestyle she was used to.
I guess.
California doesn't take long to go through $2 million, but in a month, I don't know. You know.
Every month?
That's what, 24 mil a year?
Right.
Well, I guess he better get up and start working harder. That's all I can say.
I don't think
they'll give it to her, but we didn't think that Mary J. Blige husband would get what he got either.
Right, right. You're right. But Dr. Dre don't have to put out another record in the rest of his life, and he'll be all right.
Not paying no $2 million a month, he won't, and he better not get married again.
He better get it behind back to work, huh?
Yeah, he better get back to work.
Honest, we have had a time tonight, darling. I certainly appreciate you. And we, you know, we have wonderful conversations when owners get on the show. We love you for who you are. We love owners coming on the show with us. Me and Queenie sit back here and we just bounce ideas off of owners, and we get the real when we talk to owners. So we want to thank
you,
darling.
You gotta keep it real. You
know, right. We want to thank you for coming on the show.
And
welcome you again back to the show. And we look forward to other episodes every Thursday with On It Owners, beautiful Queenie, Trainer Ray, and JD the Barber, baby. So we thank God for you and your honest, humble, and vibrant spirit that you bring to the show, darling.
And the real. Thank you. I really truly appreciate the opportunity. We're going to have to start getting a campaign to get more people listening in, you know, getting more input, because people have opinions, you know, people know some stuff. You know, I wish we knew, you know, some elderly people to just drop logical wisdom, you know, just old school wisdom on us, you know, that would be wonderful. But you know what, never despise small beginnings. I think, hey, I enjoy it, I love it, I love you, I love Queenie, y'all my most favorite couple. I admire you what you have, your togetherness, your willing to stick to each other and just support each other. So know that the feeling is mutual.
Right, right. Well, like I said, we thank you for chiming in with us. We love you, and we will see you next week on It On Us.
All right. I'm hot as hell. We here.
Amen.
Two 19 to talk, 219 to